This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. In our era of deeply divided politics, it's hard to imagine Republican and Democratic Party insiders teaming up for any kind of spirited conversation in any format or forum. But that's just what former Democratic State Party Chair Mark Brewer and former Republican Party Director Jeff Timmer are doing. They have a new podcast and web show called A Republic If You Can Keep It. Jeff Timmer and Mark Brewer join us now. Guys, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I just want to begin by sort of leveling the playing field and asking each of you to recount an embarrassing or at least a telling story about your co-host. Mark, would you like to go first?
Oh, boy. I have such great respect for Jeff. He has been the consummate political professional, does a great job for his party for so many years. And I think that, you know, there's been a mutual feeling of respect, which grew into what we're now doing. Embarrassing. Well, I hate to say this, Jeff, but I think what was probably embarrassing for you was during the gerrymandering case when we discovered you kept all those emails from back in 2011 and 12, and those became the centerpiece of our lawsuit over the skillful gerrymandering that you did.
I would have, if I had gone first, I would have chosen the same instances, the most embarrassing. It goes to show you, one, never write anything down. And number two, what you think has been deleted often is not deleted. And so, that was quite the embarrassing moment. And it wasn't embarrassing because of anything necessarily that I had done or said. Most of the, controversial or notorious exchanges were missives that were lobbed at me. People saying things to me, but nonetheless, I was the kind of the fulcrum of the lawsuit, and those exchanges, became the crux of many stories and the butt of many jokes.
I would say that one thing that I found very good during the course of that litigation, Jeff, and this shows the professionalism of Jeff. Early on, I spent several days in Lansing serving subpoenas on a wide variety of folks. I was able to call Jeff up. And he was professional enough to say, sure, I'll take the subpoena. He didn't spend days and weeks dodging the subpoena. He didn't play games. He took the subpoena and we went from there.
You two are tremendous good sports to answer the question, but I hope that that shows people something about, for lack of a better term, the working relationship that you two have had over the years. How in the world, though, did you start talking about doing a podcast and a show?
Well, it was really through a mutual friend who approached us both with the idea. And once the concept was explained to me, once I knew it was Jeff, and the concept was explained to me that this was not going to be your typical shout fest, which both of us are entirely capable of doing. We've done it for years. But it was going to be a thoughtful discussion. There can be differences of opinion, of course. That really attracted me, that it would be different from the typical political discourse nowadays.
I agree. And during the last year or two, I've been very vocal in my opposition to Donald Trump and to many in the Republican Party, now I call my former party, due to their fealty and enabling of Trump. And during that time, there had been a couple of instances where I had reached out to Mark to work on something that was bigger than partisan wins or partisan battles, and that was the effort to save our democracy, protect the integrity of our election. And, from that, even though, 2 years ago, right about now, I was sitting in a federal courthouse on the witness stand, with Mark as the opposing attorney in that aforementioned gerrymandering case, I was willing to set aside any differences that we had to work for something bigger, and Mark was willing to do the same. And we've had a great amount of respect, and the respect only grew during this last year.
Well, Jeff, I guess, Mark, if you have thoughts on this too, I'd love to hear what you have to say. But Jeff, you of all people, I think, have had a chance to witness the limits of debate over the past 4 years, given that what happened during the Trump years in the GOP was sort of an outing of the fact that people are just living in two different worlds. Why did you think that there might be something to add to the conversation by the both of you coming together like this?
Well, I think one thing that seems to be so sorely lacking in our politics, and really the way politics and culture are intertwined, it's so infected the culture and relationships between people, is the idea that you can be opponents, but you're not enemies. You can have disagreements, different opinions, different solutions to common problems. But that doesn't mean if you're not 100% with my idea of what the solution should be, if you're, you know, against me 5% of the time, there's this notion now that suddenly you're my enemy. And that exists within both political parties to an extent. You know, there's certainly a dogmatic orthodoxy that's being enforced on the Republican side that if you're not 100% in agreement of whatever it is Donald Trump wants or says, that you're somehow a heretic and you're going to be stoned in the public square. And that's where I found myself. And that's what I think is so toxic and wrong about politics today.
Mark Brewer, how would you describe the tone that you're going for with the podcast, with what Jeff said in mind?
Well, I agree with Jeff. I mean, we're both believers in democracy. I think there have to be two strong political parties in this country, both devoted to democracy, who accept election results. And so that's really my purpose. I would like to see the Republican Party rehabilitated into a party that believes in democracy again. But I think what Jeff and I hope to do in our very modest way is show that things can be different, that the discourse doesn't have to be yelling and screaming and people retreating to partisan corners, that we can have thoughtful discussions. And so again, in our modest way, I hope we can show that and enjoy each other's company and the dialogue. I've learned so much from Jeff over the years, and I hope to continue to do that, not only from him, but from our guests like Bill Kristol this week. And even though we've been on the opposite side of the political fence for decades, I have great respect for Bill Kristol. It was a real honor, frankly, for me, and I mean that, to be able to talk to him. I really enjoyed it.
Bill Kristol is, of course, the author and former White House insider under Presidents Reagan and Bush the First. He's been very vocal about the many weaknesses in our political structure right now. Is there any shortage of people like Bill Kristol who you can engage?
I think there's going to be a lot of people from both the center right and the center left who we'll be talking to on our podcast, people that have a national perspective. And really what we're trying to do is bring in how what's going on in national politics intersects with Michigan and how what's going on with Michigan intersects with national politics, the kind of purple role that Michigan plays in national politics today. And so we're going to be having interaction with many notable guests who are current or former elected officials, who are well-known people in the media or the public eye. And in doing so, I think we're going to have a good dialogue about that demonstrates how people from different perspectives can agree on some things, disagree on others, and find ways to compromise and move on and actually use government and politics for good rather than for bad.
I'm sure the both of you have spent some time in the past year around people who do not agree at all with your worldview or your takes. I often find that folks I talk to are just looking for ways to continue to have relationships with people they don't agree with. Do you have any advice or any examples of like how you've been dealing with those conversations on a personal level?
I always try to find common ground if I ever find myself in that situation. And look, when I was chair of the party, and still to this day, there are people inside the Democratic Party that I disagree with. But I try to find common ground so that we can work together and discuss whatever the topic or issue may be. That's been a little bit more work, perhaps, the last few years, but I think it's still worth trying. I mean, we're all in this together as Americans. You know, Trump voters aren't leaving the country. They're not going to leave Michigan, and vice versa. So we've got to figure out a way to live together and work together and try to, you know, rebuild trust in each other.
It's kind of funny to think that discontent might be the tie that binds us all together right now.
Well, we certainly have seen very few instances in our history where we've been so polarized, so divided. And in a way that, you know, less than 2 months ago, let's not forget, there was a lethal attempt to subvert democracy and subvert the conclusion of the election. We've seldom, if ever, been so close to the abyss when it comes to the future of our democratic republic in the system that we've all operated under, the notion that there are winners and losers in an election, that it's not public relations or might that determine the outcome of an election. And the fact that we were able to avert a catastrophe, a collapse of the entire system back in January, doesn't mean that we've escaped the danger. There's still a sect of insanity out there, and there's a toxicity that exists in our politics that isn't going to go away. We're one election away from it all happening again.
In the language of politics, the way that you two both, you know, spent many years as students of and practitioners of it, in the language of politics, you live and die by the extent to which you can frame reality for people who might vote for your candidate, who might give money to your party. Does the radicalization in the public sphere suggest that we need to get people to just think about politics differently, to think of it as less of a war and more of a negotiation?
Yeah, I think so. Look, when I was party chair, and again, still to this day, we fought as hard as we could in elections, won some, lost some. But I always believed, and I said this, after the election, you go to the legislature, you go to Congress, you know, you serve in executive office, and you work together to govern. And that means compromise. That means compromise. Nobody ever gets their way. And then, you know, you bring up those whatever grievances and disagreements you have at the next election. That's what elections are for. You don't have constant chronic fighting all the time. You work together to govern. That's an ideal I'd like to get back to.
My guests today are Mark Brewer, former chair of the Michigan Democratic Party, and Jeff Timmer, former chair of the Michigan GOP. Their new podcast and web series is called A Republic, If You Can Keep It. Hats off for finding the most cynical podcast title of the year, by the way, guys.
Really? I don't think cynical. I think hopeful.
Really?
I think Ben Franklin's quote is always timely, particularly now, given what's going on. And I think we've always got to think about, you know, how do we maintain our democracy? You know, we are, I think, one of the leading examples in the world of how a country, a democracy can thrive and succeed over two centuries.
Yeah, I think Mark underscores an important point. Ben Franklin's quote is very optimistic and congratulatory, you know, that they were able to form a republic. But the if you can keep it underscores it takes work. You can't take it for granted. And I think we found that out in a very unexpected way over these last couple of years.
Just getting back to the question about whether politics as usual should be the usual right now, what is the realistic chance of either party extending something like an olive branch right now with, you know, legislative majorities in Washington and to some degree in Lansing on such a hair's breadth right now? I mean, is political change possible when just holding on to what you have has always been the name of the game?
Well, I look at the Republicans who lost during Trump's term, lost their majority in the House of Representatives, and as he was leaving office, lost their majority in the U.S. Senate, where the Senate is tied 50-50 with Vice President Harris casting the tie-breaking vote. I believe that Joe Biden comes from a place where compromise and listening to opponents is part of his political DNA. However, his opponents do not seem at all willing to compromise or listen. They just seem interested in thwarting and defeating. And I don't think it makes any sense from the perspective of the Biden White House or Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi to negotiate with folks who are just trying to blow everything up. It's equivalent to negotiating with political terrorists.
Mark, isn't that to some extent what Democrats did with Donald Trump, though?
Well, there certainly was opposition there. Absolutely, there was. But I think there were times, and I applaud them, when they did have common ground. I think if Trump had ever come up with his infrastructure plan, there would have been a lot of Democratic support for that. So I think there were a number of initiatives there that could have been the basis for working together. We've really got to get out of this negative loop that we're in, that when people are in office, they feel compelled to continue the war from the election, just looking toward the next election to satisfy what's usually a small but vocal group inside their party, you know, and not work on the work of governing. And I continue to hold out hope that that can be restored, not just nationally, but here in Michigan as well.
Let's talk about gerrymandering. You two brought up the lawsuit at the top of the conversation that people may remember best, sort of turning the conversation about representation on its ear. What do you think of the work of the state's independent voter commission so far? Do you think it's the right solve for taking partisanship out of the drawing of district lines?
I think there's great promise with the commission, but it is a big experiment for us here in Michigan. The criteria are new. They've been turned upside down from the world that Jeff and I and many others operated in for the last several decades. The communities of interest criterion now being predominant as opposed to reservation municipal boundaries. So I remain hopeful, but I think there are a lot of challenges that the commission will face. It's doing all of this for the first time, staffing up, making decisions, holding public hearings, trying to figure out what the criteria mean. So again, I remain optimistic and hopeful, but there's a lot of hard work ahead.
I think the laws of physics are very applicable to politics often. And this is a case where for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And I think that as the Citizens Commission, in its intent was to try to lessen the impact of partisanship in the districting process, it will do that to an extent, but it will also create and add different political pressures, different unforeseen problems or wrinkles. I think that's usually the case when reforms are implemented. There's unforeseen problems, there's new challenges, there's different ways to interpret the intent. And I think, you know, politics is not going to be removed from politics. Politics is like water working its way through a rock. People are still going to be trying to influence and tilt the table their way. And I think it's going to be a continual battle that will never be completely won. Though I applaud the effort so far, we'll see how it turns out.
Are either of you betting men? Would you care to hazard a guess about whether the commission's going to be able to deliver the districts in the timeline that the Constitution calls for?
Well, I think given the delay of the census data.
I don't think they're going to be able to do that, yeah.
Yeah.
Given the delay.
Because the census data is going to be delayed until at least the end of September due to, you know, part the pandemic and then part the incompetence or recalcitrance of the Trump administration. Instead of April 1st, we're looking at October 1st before data is available. And so that right away puts the commission behind the eight ball, and they're already in violation of the Michigan Constitution at that point.
You know, I wanted to ask you about the basic premise from the lens of people who maybe have been very troubled by American politics for a long time, not just in the past 4 years. And yes, some of those folks ended up being drawn to Donald Trump. But for some people, what we might talk about as collegiality in Washington, D.C. or Lansing, they might see as coziness. You know, we hear this from folks on the political left as well as the political right. What's the best case you can make that our institutions aren't broken, that the gridlock that we see in the Senate and the radicalization of members of the House is something that we can get through, and that these institutions are really the best way we have of governing?
You know, there is a tremendous lack of trust by citizens in government. The best way to restore that is for government to deliver, whether it's, you know, solving the pandemic or reviving the economy. It's results that count. And people in my party have been guilty of this. I mean, we were big advocates starting in the 90s for free trade, but we failed in my party to take care of the people who were hurt by free trade. And that has come back to haunt us as a party. You've got to do both in politics. And so I think, again, delivering results for people is the most important thing that we can do to restore faith in these institutions.
And when it comes to the system working with the House or the Senate or the courts or the White House, I think over the last 4 years, and especially over these last few months, we've witnessed a stress test of our democracy. It was a real live, it wasn't a dress rehearsal, it was a real live stress test. And we understand now, I think, some vulnerable points and some things that might need some examination, that might need some scrutiny, and might need some strengthening. And so I think that the system did hold, you know, the Constitution and our rule of law, it's designed to continually change to try to, you know, the more perfect union. We're by no means perfect, but we have the means within the system to try to perfect the system. And I think that's what the last years and the last months, and for certain, have shown.
You know, something else occurred to us about redistricting, and I think we'll probably leave it with what we just talked about, but I did want to ask. The constitutional amendment ballot question that created the Independent Voters Commission had really broad support when it passed in 2018. There was some opposition from the GOP, but it wasn't a huge campaign. Do you think that measure would have passed if it was on the ballot right now?
I think it would. I think that the way it was presented to change the system, most people couldn't necessarily identify what they think in detail is wrong with the system, but they think the system is problematic, that the system is stacked against their interests, whatever their interests are. And so it could be better than what we have now. It's likely better than what we have now. Now, with our elected constitutional amendments that are, or when they're on the ballot, a vigorous campaign against a measure like the Citizens Redistricting Commission can sometimes convince people that the devil they know is better than the devil they don't know. But as you mentioned, there was no real organized or funded large opposition to that measure in 2018, largely because it did experience so much bipartisan support. The opposition wasn't likely to be successful if people had put significant resources behind it.
I agree with Jeff. I think it would still pass today, but I think it would be closer and there would be more vigorous opposition to it. We saw after it passed, that Republican Party interests litigate, and they're continuing to litigate to try to strike the commission down. So again, I think it would pass today, but it would be closer and a tougher campaign.
Mark Brewer is a former state Democratic Party chair. Jeff Timmer is the former director of Michigan's Republican Party. Their new podcast and web series is A Republic If You Can Keep It. Guys, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for talking to us.
Make sure you subscribe.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you.